I'm Mary Yurkovic, and as Guy said, I run the Smart Content Advisory Council for MESA, and we're a group of media and entertainment executives who really try to push the limits with making content much smarter. And in addition to that, I am a consultant in the space, and I work with organizations large and small in helping them make their content smart as well. And as we've been talking about all day, interoperability, metadata, data, innovation, how do we make all of this come together so our content is smarter? We have two amazing panelists up here who will share their opinion and their stories. We're the last session of the day. I encourage questions and interaction with you guys. Ed Zhang, unfortunately, could not join us today. So we are short one end user, but I am confident there is enough opinions here. So I'm going to have the panelists introduce themselves, and if you could also tell us what kind of cool projects you're working on to make content and metadata and data interoperable.
Hi, everybody. I'm Michael Jeffrey here, VP of Client Engagement Partnerships with TiVo. Cool stuff. There's two very, very large. One of them is actually based here, media networks here that are doing some pretty amazing things with content and actually basically taking all that metadata and aligning, defining, really with the goal of being able to distribute and fragment the content. And I've heard earlier today about, you know, data is your future and everything. And just one piece I'll say with several of these large media folks is they're very, 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 very interested in how can I distribute portions of my long-form content into smaller pieces. And today you're beginning to see that. I'm pretty excited about that, actually being able to take long-form and combine that. Some folks call that UGC, combining that long form or pieces of it with your own creative pieces, and I think we'll see a lot more of that. So pretty cool stuff going on.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Felix Cisneros, Managing Principal of Olive Bridge Media Partners, a consultancy that works with cable companies and broadcasters on automating their digital supply chain. One of the projects I'm working on is with a large broadcaster who is really kind of remaking all of their internal systems, everything from, you know, digital asset management, rights, master title management, and all the way down to everything from timekeeping to physical asset management, really kind of remaking all of their systems and really doing it in a way that really brings to life some of the things that a lot of us have been talking about for a long time, which is integrating things from the very top, starting from the point of acquisition of rights, of actually negotiating deals, and perpetuating that all the way through to the actual digital supply chain and the distribution side, and doing it in a smart way, doing it in a way where you're not bound by necessarily really bad legacy systems that you have to still conform to, utilizing things like EIDR and other types of identifiers to try to automate that supply chain. So, you know, it's good to actually see some of that actually coming to fruition. Certain, you know, companies are a little more ahead of others in that regard. So excited to be a part of that.
Yeah, thanks. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that. This digital supply chain and, you know, where does it start? I try to tell people it really starts with a cocktail napkin. If you're in a creative environment, you're scribbling something down over cocktails and sharing ideas, so it starts there. But what are some innovative tools at the start of as content is being created and going through the processes? Certainly you have the rights component to it, but other components?
Well, I'll start with kind of answer that question. After the cocktail and the paying the tip and everything else for your drinks, any creative work, you're going to end up with somebody went out and figured out what individuals are going to be a part of that. So you have props, you have rights for other media content. So you end up with probably 10, 20, 30 systems already. And we haven't actually, quote, created the creative yet. And already you have some of those things. Oh, and then the rights stuff comes in a little later. But so you'll have all of that workflow process already started, and it may just even be in 10 or 20 completely separate systems where you said find a director, producer, let me see who's going to finance it, what brand does it apply to, what's my position. Well, already you've created 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 systems, and you might have a lot of different spellings of that 7-Eleven already.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, just building on that, that's absolutely right. During the production process, so much data is created, and then I would also argue that so much data is lost, because none of that information, none of the media itself, and many times the systems that the production is using are not even necessarily controlled or owned by the company producing the content. You know, many times if, you know, the costume designer has their system that they use for basically everything that they're working on, any pictures, any fittings, any data that is part of that is stored within that system that that person's using. They're going to now take that system to their next show, and that never even necessarily becomes part of the workflow on the production side of who actually produced the project. So you have a lot of freelancers, you have a lot of people who are in and out and using tools that aren't even under the control of that, and no real kind of wholesale standardized way of ingesting that in. It's just kind of lost, or ends up on, you know, some PA's hard drive, you know, in somebody's cubicle, and, you know, is not archived, is not tagged, and just kind of is you know, lives there at that point.
And just a plug again earlier on your point about classification, we heard at that stage, you mentioned like the production and props. What I see with some very, very large broadcaster and studios today working with is there's really fundamental classification challenges, like, well, what's a prop? And the clothing and the mural. And some folks have said, well, why does it matter? And I give you some little sound bites. So there are places and things that people will consume and watch and engage with content, and they want to know where is that place, or if the content, and I'll give an example, let's say we're chatting over drinks and we was Mai Tais and we're going to go to Hawaii, and it's a travel thing about Hawaii. Well, suddenly, the props about Hawaii, the drinks, the locations, the outfits, the whatever, suddenly do become important. Those are monetizable, they're interesting, they can get engagement, and they could be stored in a different system, and it's not called a Mai Tai, it's called an old Cuban. And suddenly you now have all these different variants, and classification becomes a problem of what's a prop, and how to classify these. So it's a huge problem, I think, for the industry, this whole kind of classification. We talk about master data management, but that's a flashback on them. But for this industry, there's this whole secret world of all the suppliers, all the trade secrets in those separate systems. And how do I take that secret that I don't even want to share with others, and I don't have to? You ask me for a prop or a setup for production or whatever, or to make a drink, and I got that for you. Go ahead and do your creative whatever thing, but I want to keep all that a secret. And that leads to then all these silos and fiefdoms, and really hugely challenging for all of us industry to put together or to combine or engage or distribute. You know, that's a huge challenge, I think, for this industry.
It is a huge challenge. And from my experience, the impact on delivering that content to the various formats it needs to be put in is a huge challenging. So if you're a movie producing a movie, you know, you do want to keep some of that secret in your little fiefdom, but it's valuable to other groups within your organization. But still, you need to get the content out there in the respective format that it needs to be. So if you're producing the next Iron Man movie, you know, you want the trailers, you want the teasers, you want the posters. What innovations are you guys seeing with delivering content with its data to the different formats?
Well, certainly we're starting to see with orchestration, with some of the tools that are out there that are really trying to bring all of this together. And we're talking, again, the very, very highest upstream data, starting with rights, starting with master title management, starting with unique identifiers, right? These distribution deals have become so complicated by platform, by territory. When you have language concerns, you have content concerns with regards to the type of content, and then you have all of your different affiliate deals, which in many instances will conflict with each other. So if you have got, if you have the rights to put this particular content on this platform, you are excluded from being able to place it on this platform, or you have to provide a window of time between those two things. Having all of that data flowing down through to that so that you can orchestrate it and then distribute it, both from a video, from an artwork perspective, and also from a metadata perspective, you need those upstream systems to be able to communicate downstream. You're not going to be able, you're not going to solve this at the transcoding MAM distribution phase. You can solve certainly various components with it, but in order to really start seeing the real efficiencies that we're talking about, as these distribution platforms get more challenging, you need that upstream data. And if you don't have it, you need people, you know, and I don't hear any big media CEO right now saying they want to invest more in operations, right? They want to invest in programming, original content, analytics. You know, nobody's saying they want to hire more people to type in metadata from here to here and here to here, you know, and manually resize artwork for this platform, this platform, and this platform.
And just to build on it, to answer your question, I don't see really yet in our industry, you know, excellent at the distribution and at exchange. Earlier, the discussion on advertising and DAI, there was one point that I thought very poignant. It said the variance. We haven't even established like voiceover or different territory or a different call to action. Is that a different work? And I think more and more I see the word "it depends." That's really hard to codify that and distribute that to say, well, it's situational, it depends, it's, I'm not going to tell you, I don't know. It's that we're in that kind of situation now where we want to insert a different sponsor. Certain brands have said, you know, I don't want to be associated with other brands for your Iron Man. And is it okay? Well, it depends. Is it okay in Spanish to voice over this call to action versus me? It depends. And that right away, that to me says the industry, we have a lot of work to do with all the variants, and variation is exponentially increasing. In fact, I think technology and distribution is making it easier. And then from a world point of view, we all like to have it more and more personalized. We expect it to be personalized, all of us. And with that is then coming all the variants. And we don't yet, I think, have a good grasp on is it a different work? Mm-hmm. And if it is, then there's other compensation, there's other rights, and other lots of other things that come into play.
Sure. And just to build on that point, Scott said in his keynote presentation, and Dr. Steven, they were talking about philosophy, and when you start involving humans to make decisions, you have some philosophical decisions that you need to make, and there may be right or wrong decisions. Who knows? They were decisions made, but to the point, you do have to have some sort of human interaction to get some of this content out the door. And tying to that is the whole change management concept of going to the CEO and saying, we need to change within the organization to work smarter. What challenges and successes have you guys seen with that?
You know, building on, just so it's not all negative here for addressing that question. So one is, I think we're in this phase where we're starting just the tip of being able to generate enormous amounts of what I call machine-type data.
Yeah.
And I tell my kids often, computers and machines are actually remarkably stupid. They're fantastic at moving really quick and doing one thing amazingly fast. The problem is that's all they do. whatever you tell it exactly, and it can do it hugely fast. So we're just at the stage now with automation to be able to extract from actual works, data elements. What was the feature of it? Was a scene, semantic analysis, all these kinds of tons of data. That first phase is just going to create what I call pollution, data pollution. And then we'll create the situation where to the next level is, hey, we need to put some meaning out of that. And this is where you get into the, there's opportunity, there's business. And I say, we're just beginning to experiment in that area. I think that's where you get into the C-level discussion, saying, hey, if we could have standardization on this, or we could partner with that, or we could open the Pandora box of rights and get at some of this pieces here, catalog that, you could distribute this in this territory, and you could increase your X amount. Or did you know that Y amount of your movies sit, a third of your movies sit in Vietnam, undistributed because no one's rated them? They don't have a local rating of the government entity, and it takes you 18 months to get through that back catalog. Even though all the rights have been established, you just don't have that governmental tick off of what the rating is. And so you've lost Y millions of dollars. Why don't we go solve it? So we're just kind of getting at the point where massive amounts of data, semantic analysis, fragmenting, combining, where you maybe over the next, I say, 3 to 5 years, be able to present to the C-level saying, here's an opportunity, and here's a loss, here's a loss, here's a loss for us not doing anything with that opportunity. Let's go tackle one or two or three of those. That's how I say this will get solved out, because right now, we're just at that stage where we're just beginning to create enormous amounts of data.
Felix? That's absolutely right. I mean, the best financial arguments that I've found over the years, and I'm sure everybody has similar experiences, where do you feel like, where can you show that you're potentially leaving money on the table, right? It's not enough to just say, this is a great idea. It's not enough to just say, there's an operational efficiency here. It's not enough to say, it's the right thing to do. It's, are we leaving money on the table? Are we letting our competitors have an advantage over us because we're not taking advantage of this? So to kind of a little bit expand on what Michael's talking about, because it's a really great concept and one that I hope we see a lot more evolution of, is also taking a look at the actual distribution kind of data that is generated. There's so much data that's generated. And really looking at where, you know, from an operational perspective, you can better utilize the assets. So there's the inventory aspect of it, of from a metadata, why can't we better license this content based upon various aspects of that? But from an operational perspective as well, you get, again, into going back into artwork. So many of the platforms now, the metadata is more behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. The front-facing user interface is very image-driven now. If you look at any website, any app, it's all image-based. And so the number of images that these platforms are asking for, and and they're all trying to compete using their UI as their differentiating factor. If you have back catalog content that you distributed 4 years ago, and you don't have pick your aspect ratio image for that, you know, are you going to be able to best distribute that on Hulu? Because Hulu is specifically looking for that artwork. And if you didn't provide that, and you provided the best next thing you had, what does that look like from a user perspective on Hulu? It maybe looks terrible, which means that users are much less likely to engage and click and you know, view that content, or worse, purchase that content. I'm sure all of us are guilty of that. You're scrolling through Netflix or Amazon and you see a really crappy image, you're going to be less likely to press play. And so going back to looking at that, looking at all of those different supply chain pieces to show where are we underutilizing, you know, what we have.
I just want to last build on what Felix is saying on imagery. Those that may be aware of it, about 2 years ago, Netflix published on their blog analysis that they'd done with different imagery. I'd encourage all of you to take a look if you haven't. Many have known. And the key here is taking different imagery for the identical work and presenting it to people and getting different click-through or engagement rates. The identical work, presenting different imagery for different people and getting their attention. So this is all about advertising. This is all what we're talking about. And ultimately, that drives more engagement. Fascinating study, different imagery, different cultures. There's too many people, too little, males versus females. Actually taking scenes and actually pulling pieces out of it and actually putting imagery shots in for people that like, you know, action versus romance, even though we're talking about the identical movie and getting engagement and enjoyment. I say that we're doing some very, very exciting work with a couple of broadcasters in this exact area, taking their back catalog and actually pulling scenes out with different semantic meaning and presenting imagery and putting metadata around that for different meanings. So presenting and then being able to give to the Netflixes or Hulus of the world so they can tailor it for the identical catalog with different imagery for the same ones. And that in turn is actually driving a 2 or 3x kind of click-through rate, engagement rate. Mm-hmm. I encourage you to look at the Netflix data. It's pretty good. It's public, so everybody can get some real data on it. But that's where we're all going, I think, as an industry, of taking our current assets and how to present them better, promote them better. Kind of very exciting. We all are very imagery-driven people, and even different cultures require different imagery. And then the metadata is essential for when to present that imagery.
Right. Getting the right message and the right content to the right people.
At the right time.
At the right time. Do we have any questions from the audience? I wanted this to be a little more interactive.
Guy, you have a question?
I have a question. When can we have a margarita? No, you know, we are out of time. I'm so sorry. And, you know, first of all, thank you to Mary. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Felix, wrapping it up with a great panel.